NZ Aero Sports, Icarus Canopies, now Gyro. That's right, we've rebranded, and Gyro is our next generation. It honours our founder, as that's the name we knew him by, but Gyro also marks the start of a new chapter. And not to be biased, but it's going to be fucking epic. Long story short, we're more us than ever. So if you're new to the sport, or even a Sky God Ninja Turtle, welcome. I think our valiant leader Lucy, Gyro's daughter, says it best.
And we still got that fuck yeah attitude. Rebrand, woo!
Rebrand, woo indeed, Lucy. Anyway, head over to gyro.com for more info and get amongst your legends.
I was 19, broke, unemployed, and sold my girlfriend's canopy for drug money. So I thought I better sew her a new one. What a sentence and what a story. This describes the humble yet outrageous beginnings of NZ Aerosports, the home of Icarus Canopies, in the words of our founder himself. From getting a paratrooper toy from his mom, watching parachutes at the DZ as a six-year-old, jumping off the wharf with a parachute made from bedsheets, doing his first jump at 16, sewing his first canopy on a borrowed machine at 19, and starting to sell parachutes out of a garage in 1986, Paul Gyro Martin had an undying love for the sky. Our company started with one man with the wildest of spirits in a true blue sky dream, a renegade. In the time that Gyro created and ran the Icarus Canopies brand until he passed away in 2017, he pushed everything he had to its limits. We miss him and we always will. Gyro is the next generation of NZ Aerosports. It honors our founder, of course, because it was the name we all knew him by, but Gyro the rebrand also marks the start of a new chapter, our next jump. Gyro is the space between sound and silence, art and science, chaos and calm. Gyro is a state of epic tranquility that transcends understanding. That moment, in the door, in free fall, mid-swoop, where nothing but the present exists. A perfect balance of euphoria and thrill. Gyro captures our passion for flying and our commitment to designing break-the-fucking-rules canopies that deliver pilots pure, wild flight.
Hey gang, so I got a new book out. It's called The Upside of Fear, and it's exactly what you think it's about. It's about the good side of, well, getting scared. In it, we talk not only about the science and biology behind fear, but the psychology as well. And it's not just coming from me, it's coming from some of the best in the sport. Omar Al-Hijalon, Jeff Provenzano, Maxine Tate, and so many more have contributed their sometimes terrifying stories to the book to help you overcome your fear. So head to the lunaticfringepodcast.com. You're going to find the link to the book there, as well as the other books. It's available in ebook, paperback, hardback, and audiobook right now.
Coming straight from the cockpit, it's another episode of Lunatic Fringe with the fucking pilot.
Ready, set, go! Back in the can for another edition of the Lunatic Fringe Podcast and a smiling face on the other end. Please, straight to it. Who the fuck are you and what do you do?
What I do? No, I do the minimum what is possible to live the better I can.
You're doing a good job of it.
And I'm a specialist on that.
Yeah. So who are you? What's your name and what's your profession these days?
My name is John. Rhino John, because I'm probably the only person you know who have 279 rhinos as a pet.
Yeah.
I don't live in an apartment. Huh? I have a garden. Huh?
You're not only the only person that I know that has 270 rhinos, you're the only person I know that has a rhino.
Yeah.
How? Yeah. Before we get into anything else, how the fuck do you have 270 rhinos as pets?
Hey, because it's a long story.
We got time.
It's a very long story. I arrived to Kenya. I start to make business with military equipment and metals, gold and copper. And one guy scammed me.
Ah.
He scammed me he was thinking I was a very nice guy. He don't really know from where I come from, because of what I always say, nobody really know what is the past of somebody.
Sure.
And I don't want to be scammed. If I don't want to have a first guy who scam me, because if not, that never go to finish.
Yeah.
And when you are a Muzungu, a white guy in Africa, you're a very normally easy victim.
Sure.
Then what I do? I kidnap the guy.
Wait, I'm sorry. He scammed you, so you kidnapped him?
I kidnapped him. Actually, my intention was not to kidnap him. My intention was to kill him. Oh. Yes. But it's normal. You scam. Action, reaction. You know?
I mean...
I take the guy. He was lucky because I go myself. No? I take him to one very nice place in the middle of the jungle. And I start to explain him the problem what he has. The guy find a way to meet to be, trust him, and he say he go to pay me with 90 hectares of land. He convinced me, because it's very difficult to convince somebody who go to believe you, because after that he can run to the police and say, "Oh, this guy kidnapped me." No,
right.
But I explained him. It was also not the best idea what he can have on his life. But actually, the guy is a partner of mine. Huh? He's a very, very good friend of mine. Huh?
But it started out with he tried to scam you and you kidnapped him.
Extremely trustable. Because, you know, nobody can trust you. You can never can trust somebody more than somebody who sees your bad side. Because he know what's the problem if I get angry.
Yeah.
And he know I don't have to get angry. Now, normally, I don't get angry very easy, but I can get angry. And it's not a good.
I definitely wouldn't want to see you on a... Actually, it's kind of funny, and we'll get into it, but I've seen you when you're pretty snarky, because we were at that last dinner for the Kenya Boogie when that one British woman was speaking out of turn and getting mad at us for getting loud. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes. That is absolutely... Yes. But that it was not even a person. It was only a ghost. Yeah.
Well, that's the funny thing, though, is if that reaction is one that's considered just relaxing and mellow because it was just funny, I can imagine what it's like if you're actually pissed off.
Ask to the Spanish authorities. I get pissed off. I burn a big building. It's on the whole news. I build a building on 29th floor.
Yeah, I mean, well, actually, let's just dive into it. You've had a hell of a past, because I remember, you know, you and I met in Kenya and your stories preceded you. I had heard a bit about you before we actually met. So, of course, I had to ask about your past life and your past businesses. And I think you even wrote a book, didn't you?
Yes, I have a few books. I have 5 books. I'm in a series of Amazon.
So
I'm in Spain. The name is Sapo S.A., but only on Spanish till now. They go to translate a few times VPN. You can get it, but it's in Spanish. My past. Yeah, I got to tell you all my past very fast. The young. No.
Yeah, very fast. It's good.
I'm originally coming from an extremely rich family.
Okay.
From my side, my family was king of Poland, 16th generation.
Wow.
Yes, the ex-pope Jean-Paul II was educated by the prince, Cardinal Prince Apieja, was a part of my family. And from the other side, my father is the son of an ambassador in China. And when he finished to study university, he was the first one throwing stone in May 68 in the Sorbonne. He'd be very famous for that. He became a hippie.
Okay.
Because we used to be in Goa, in India, in Thailand, in Philippines, in Mindanao, and all over the world.
Sure.
But he would have a pink Rolls Royce, Ferrari, but he was a hippie. He was the idea of the rich hippie.
Okay. A rich hippie.
Yes. From there, I study very well. And I don't want to make the military service, like for sure, the handsome of a hippie. That time, you still have military service. And by luck or not luck, I become the black goat of the family because I entered in the army, I entered in the special service of the army. I studied in America, in San Diego, and I was training with the Mossad, with the American Army, French Legion. Actually, I have a grad of the French Legion.
Okay.
And from there, I was in special force for many years. And from there, I start to work for the Secret Service of the Army. I can say it because it's in the book. Huh?
Sure.
In the television. I signed a contract of 25 years of confidentiality.
Sure.
This time of five, nobody believe I got to be living that long.
Yeah.
Because if they make me leave, they make me write a contract of 50 or 70 years. Huh? Yeah. But I'm still there. Oh, nobody is there. We don't know.
I love it that they made you write a confidentiality clause for only a certain length of time because they figured you'd be dead before it ended.
Look, I have a bullet here, even in the mouth, went through my mouth, through my teeth. This one is fake. I have a bullet there. I have three other bullets on my body. They call me the immortal because I even survived to bomb on my car. I don't know if the bomb was in Spain. For one day, maximum 8 months, because the car was 8 months. Huh? But 1 hour, 2 hours, but the bomb don't explode. And when I send the car to make revision in Malbella, they find a bomb under the car. I mean, I survived to many things. I've been bit by a snake. I've been attacked by people. And they call me survivor.
Yeah, you're a survivor. There's no doubt about that.
Immortal.
So you did the special forces and the secret service with the military and all that, but you ended up with some very creative professions.
Yes, because my formation, I was very well formed, and probably I've been the person who been longer time, probably even in the world, involved as a not secret agent because I was working and doing my thing. I was in both sides of the law. For all my life. But even going to jail, entry to jail, get shot, it was part of my job.
Sure. Well, now, but...
No, I was very well paid by the government, but also I steal whatever it was possible, I traffic whatever it was possible. I used to enter 120,000 kilo of hashish in Spain for many, many years per year. No, it's true. I do everything what you can imagine, but at the truth, in one part, I was protected.
So you were kind of protected and able to get away with a lot of that stuff because of your connections with the government?
Because us, we don't fight we are not fighting against criminality. But what is better to involve in any other business than to show people you're a criminal? With a real path. Yeah, somebody who be in jail, and after that, it's very easy to know for when is coming the money who go to provide money to terrorism or to organize crime. It's very easy.
No, sure.
And we never arrest directly people who was involved with me.
Sure. So
I was not even a snitch. I worked with the criminal as a criminal.
But So the reason that you were able to help bring other criminals down was because you were a criminal.
You don't really bring them down, but you're more interested about the economy and about what happened. Us is not the police. We are not from the police. We are from the army.
Okay.
That means we don't arrest people. We don't give fuck. What you want? We are not gendarmes. We are not police. Me, if you want to bring 2,000 kilo cocaine to somewhere. Do it. It's not my problem. I'm not here to arrest you. If your passport is fake, it's not my. I'm not there to put you in jail. We are much. We have another level of this business.
Now, one of the stories that I had heard before we met was something along the lines of art theft.
Yes. I was one of the six bigger art thief in the world. Actually, one of the very funny thing what is in one book.
Please.
I robbed one woman because I get also a little bit upset with her. She has 22 bodyguards at the house. I steal from her 100 million euros painting. And she paid, but this one, she has to pay me to get them back. Huh? She gave me 2 million euros. Huh? Plus 1 million what I steal from the FBI.
Now, well, first off, What is the name of this book that these stories are in?
I have a few books. One is Pour un amour à l'arte.
Okay. I'm gonna have you, when we're off the podcast, I'm going to have you send me all the titles so that I can list them in the description of this. Because there's
the only one where we can find some, because I'm an extremely bad writer. I was much better Robin Bank or Robin Hart than what I write. No, much better. Huh? But this book, the last book what I have write, what is a lot from Spain, been sold 75,000.
Jeez.
And I'm an extremely bad writer. When we start the book, when I sell the right to the company, I sell the right, I permit them to rewrite the book.
Nice.
Then they do. They rewrite the book. No, but when they write the book, when they start to read the book the way what I write it, and when they write the book the way what the guy who they pay to write was extremely good guy to write, no, write the book, they prefer mine than they publish mine.
So your writing just told the story better than an extremely good writer.
First, because maybe when you don't know to write, you write better than somebody to write, because it's like, you know, if you continue all the rules and everything, probably all the writers follow rules. Me, I have not followed rules in my life. I don't go to start to follow rules when I write.
Well, I would think that if you're writing it yourself, it's coming straight out of your head and straight from the heart onto the paper, just like you would tell a story. So it comes across more genuine.
I don't know, but probably, yes.
So, all right. All of this from the military, first a wealthy family and then into the military and then into the Secret Service and then a dual life with that and crime and art thief and all that. Where in the hell did skydiving come into your life with all of that excitement going on? What the fuck did you need more excitement for?
I tell you, that was a horrible experience, the worst experience in my life. that one and my last wedding. I don't know what it was worth. My last wedding was maybe worse than my first jumps. My first job was very, very funny. I go to train. I was in French Legion, huh? And normally I used to train in America, also in Guyana. But the jumping course was in a course.
Okay.
We go plenty of people. They put them a bag on the front, a bag on the back, a little helmet. They show us a plane. They put us nearly kicking us on the fucking plane. No, many, many people on this plane, you know, military plane. I don't know if you know.
All right.
How they are now. And come my time to jump. Yeah, I don't want to jump for 400 meters. I want to jump from that shit. Now, I only don't shit on myself because I've been to the toilet before. I was afraid, you don't imagine how. But on this plane, you know, it was a lot of testosterone. Huh? It was no way to don't jump. No, I jump. Phew! No, this fucking parachute, wrong parachute open. Me, I was thinking I got to land like a little flower on the floor, but boom, bah! No, it's not like a little flower with the wrong parachute. It's like if they throw you from 4 meters with no parachute. Okay, but nothing happened. They say again, then again. Second jump, boom. Same story, I don't want to jump. I absolutely don't want to jump, okay? And we make two jump one day, two jump the other day. Fifth jump is a mission jump on the border from Libya to Chad. This one it was a little bit worse because the third jump, I do it with a little bit of equipment. The fourth jump, I didn't with a little bit more. But when I jump in Chad, I jump full equipment. No, I don't know if the pilot want to be nice with me or what happened. I land very far from where was the mission. Huh?
Right.
When I arrived there, everybody was dead. Everybody was prisoner. I tried to run. It was warm. Now I think it was also Ramadan. I arrived there. Mission finished. Helicopter come to pick us. We go. Now that was my first experience.
That's a pretty brutal first experience.
Yes, particularly the landings. Because the landings on the wrong parachute are really, really special.
Oh, man.
You have jump with a wrong parachute?
No, I haven't. I've only seen it being done, and I don't ever want to do it.
No, it's not a good idea.
No, it doesn't look like it.
No. I have many jumps. You know the funny thing what you have? On all the time, I have many jumps on one parachute, many. And all the time I have jumped with one parachute. And all the time I was training on the army, I have never hurt myself.
Mm.
Not even twist one finger. What is extremely difficult when you train with French army, with the Mossad, with the American, never. On training, never. On mission, yes. No. Yeah, but on training, never.
So you don't hurt yourself when you're training, but when it counts, when it's serious, that's when you hurt yourself.
Oh, yes. I always twist one leg or somebody have the idea to shoot you, try to kill you. And
so with such a bad experience the first time you're out there jumping, doing the military stuff, why in the fuck would you decide you'd want to go be a sport skydiver?
And normally, you know, it's not because you have a bad fuck, you stop to fuck. Huh?
That's true. You got me there. Was it just something that that you knew there must be more to it and you thought you could enjoy it? Or you
after
just
that,
didn't?
I jumped in the army. After that, I stopped to jump and I restart to jump. And after that, I find a fantastic guy, you know, Alan Gayton.
I know Alan very well.
He really reintroduced me to jump. When I was in Dubai at the beginning, I do it because I was boring. And after that, but I have restart to jump. I have jumped on the middle of the military and saying I've started top. But I never find somebody who really inspired me to jump. No?
Sure.
I find him in the same time. It was the story of a jetman. And it was on that. When I was in there, I was in Dubai. I have time. No, because I like to say to you, me, if you give me what I have to privilege, if it's the time of the money, I tell you the time. People say, I say that because I have a lot of money. But you know, the time on life, you have only two things. Huh?
Yeah.
You have time and energy. No, the time you can die in 2 seconds. You can die when you're 1 year old. You can die in 2 seconds. I can have a clot now. That means the time you don't know.
Yeah.
And the energy normally after 35 years go less. Then I decide to do whatever I like before I have not energy. And when I have not energy to do what I go to like, probably I don't go to open the parachute.
Yeah, yeah. So now how did you meet Alan in Dubai?
How I meet Alan in Dubai? Probably I am the person you see in front of you who have made more AFF on his life.
How many AFF?
I don't know, but I have made with many different names. Huh? And then not many, but minimum 4. Okay, I meet Alan in Dubai. At the truth, at the beginning, I really don't like this guy. Huh? Like many people. Like, I'm not the only one. Huh? But immediately after, I like the guy because he was 110 different percent different of me. I'm a completely non-organized people on my normal life, on my professional life. I'm mega organized, but on my normal life, I'm not organized.
Sure.
The guy was like that. He met me with one girl to make the IFF. I do the IFF, the second jump, I hurt myself, and you don't imagine how. I don't kill myself, I don't know what. I have had to stop the IFF, this one. And I go, imagine in Dubai, it's not Midi Bush. Huh?
No.
In Dubai, it's desert. Huh? I find one bush with one tree.
Of course she did.
No, but the bush attacked me. Me, I was landing normal and the bush comes straight to me. I don't know why. Normal thing, what do the bush? Huh? Okay. Then after that, immediately after, I continue and we start to jump and jump and jump and jump and jump and jump and jump. And 100 jump, 200 jump, 1,000 jump, a few thousand jump. Because sometimes we jump many, many times a day, 10 to 15 times a day.
Sure.
A day,
huh?
Then, and after that, I decide to buy a plane to jump more. I buy helicopters and toys and more toys. And I continue to jump till I open my own drop zone, but for military use in Kenya.
I mean, that's a hell of a journey from pounding in under round parachutes, just doing military stuff, to eventually making it to Dubai, where you start your sport skydiving career because of a mutual friend of ours. You, obviously had a tough time with that if you're getting attacked by bushes and trees in fucking Dubai of all places. But you kept with it, because one of the things that I recognized with you as soon as we met in Kenya was how much you were enjoying what was going on. Like, you had a fucking blast in Kenya at the boogie, and it was obvious that you were having a lot of fun being there at the drop zone and jumping and then landing on the golf course. And it was so cool to watch you having that much fun. I had no idea that you had such a rocky start to the sport.
Well, yeah, but I have a rocky start. Many other sport too, huh?
Yeah.
I also ski. I ski with. I have a yes. Yes.
So when we talked yesterday, we were setting up the podcast and you sent me a short video, and then we actually had a quick WhatsApp call from your property in Kenya, where you were explaining to me that somewhere near you were lions, but you weren't sure where, and that your dog was protecting you. That's not a normal.
It's a security system. Immediately when you listen to the lions, they come to sit on my back. Huh? He's a very, very protective dog. Huh?
I mean, this is obviously this is your life, but for most people, the idea of pulling up alone in their Land Rover with a dog somewhere where there are lions running around is just kind of crazy.
You know, sometimes it's much more dangerous to sleep in your living room with your wife and your stepmother. Huh?
Yeah, that's true. That is true. How did
lion minimum, you see, when they come, then they can pull on you anytime. Huh?
Now, is the property that you have in Kenya, is that part of a reserve, or that's just open Kenya?
Yes, my property is, I have a little garden. My garden is 12,000 hectares.
With 270 rhino.
Yes, I have rhinos. I don't know how many elephants I have. If I can send you things, I can show you an elephant drinking beer with me, a lion who lives with me, my rhinos with who I interact with, some of them, snakes. Yes. I have very bad contact with humans, but very good with animals.
Now, where did that come about? I mean, that's you've had such a crazy life at this point. How do you end up on such a massive piece of land in Kenya with all these animals? Is it just because people suck and you enjoy hanging out with lions more?
No. At the beginning, I started. The beginning, I start with the 90 hectares, what I say to you.
Yeah.
And after that, I make one company. The name is Fog Poachers, because there was a lot of poaching in Kenya.
Yeah.
And I decide to start to kill the poachers. And with the authorization of the government, at the beginning, they don't take me very serious, huh? Because I said to them, okay, I got to bring some people. We are not fighting with Somalis in Somalia to getting back boats or kidnapped by pirates. We got to do something for the country. Okay, then I start to do it. In my region, at the beginning, I killed 29 of them. And my people also some. And after that, we start to do it all around Kenya. After that, we start to do it in Tanzania. Tanzania is more complicated because the government is helping them. Huh? And I was in very good relation with the ex-president of Kenya, with the mother of the ex-president of Kenya, who was the first lady after the independence of Kenya. And they opened me the hand because, you know, nobody come to Kenya to see poachers.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know that just growing up and becoming more and more aware through all the documentaries that would come out over the years of Africa and its wildlife, I know that poaching was an enormous problem, especially with rhinos for the horns and such, yeah?
Yeah, you know, I do something that people don't go to appreciate, maybe, but from 2020, it's not one rhino been poached in Kenya. I have a little bit finished with the exploitation of the poacher. And I have helped very diplomatically their best buyer to go back to his fucking country in China. And it's the reason why I don't go to eat in Chinese restaurant. Huh? I'm very sorry. Chinese people only really like me, probably. Then I start to do that. Then people start to take me serious. I start to give conference and explaining to the population. Nobody, what I just said to you, nobody come to Kenya to see poachers. And if there's no more animals to come to see Novodik or to come to Kenya, because Kenya have nothing else to offer than nature.
I mean, it's a beautiful place, but you're right. I mean, the animals are the big draw. I mean, I remember flying there for that boogie with you guys, the two giraffe that would hang out right at the fence line of the airfield. And I've got great pictures and video of this giraffe just coming up and licking me, which was the craziest thing in the world. It was just absolutely amazing. And I can imagine that I have been licked by a giraffe.
You see that in the lick?
What?
Mamma mia, I don't want to imagine your situation. You're back home. Oh, no, you, that would be a, that going to be a divorce for sure.
Now, with the property and everything that you have, is it just the reserve and everything, or are you doing other stuff with the property?
No, no, no. Me, I have my property is 12,000 inside 19,000.
Wow.
No, no, I don't do anything else. Yes, I train militaries. I have a company, a security company. I train rangers. I have a license before to have cattle. Some jealousy of people make my license go out. It's not a problem. I'm not a farmer. I was losing money with that story. Only the I can make the local. I have 220 families who work for me. Huh?
Wow.
I have schools. I just today, it's not possible to show you, but I was bringing whiteboards to many little school. I have built a bigger school. I have many different projects. My second project is I used to make holes for water on villages. I have buy the big machines. I do myself. I decide one village when people go to walk 15, 20 kilometers to get water. I make there my pigment type pipe to their house. No,
it sounds.
I have many problems. For example, me, I'm not somebody who go to give money to the Red Cross.
Sure.
Not because I don't believe in them. Huh? They are very, very nice people, but they are very huge system. That means when you give the money to them. To manage their system on a place like Europe or America, 70% of the money go there.
Yeah.
15 go to the groups what they need on the place, and only 15 maybe go to the real people who need it. Mm. But not because they have a bad intention. I don't think many people of Red Cross stole money. I know many, many, many of them. I have collaborated with them many times on distribution of food and things like that. I don't want people to understand when I talk about them or I talk about mega organization, they have a bad intention. But their system is too heavy.
Mm.
See, me, I never go to give them money, but I give money to people who need. I do things what people need. I also receive a lot of money. No, and me, I don't really need money. No.
Well, it sounds to me like you're using what you've got to try and forward good causes. I mean, digging wells.
No. At the beginning, yes. At the beginning, my story of rhinos cost me $800,000 per month.
Whoa, wow.
Yeah. Now I have a budget from ONG, no? I don't know what you call that in English. From America, who give me more or less $11 million. Even like that, no, because I need for me to live. No, I don't need more money. I have everything what I need, and I make money enough. No, to live few lives. No.
Sure.
That means now my farm don't cost me money.
So it's yeah, it's
me, but I have the story who is like an example on this country.
Yeah.
If you look, Pajeta is one of the best conservancy on the world. No, for protection, for the system, for the things, what we do, what you have to do, is not me. Huh? Yeah, me, I'm only a little piece of shit and a big booze.
But
many people who help, many people who get conscient on that. From many different countries, huh? From America, from Canada, I receive people this year, investors, but also Indians, Africans, with money, with no money, somebody helped with his work, somebody helped with money, somebody helped with many different things. People, maybe they have, they buy 15 trucks, and they get the old trucks for 10 years, 5 years, they give to us. Or after that, sometimes we don't even need, we give to somebody else who needs.
Sure. Now, with all of this stuff that you've got going on, when do you find time to go out and jump? Or do you jump on a regular basis, or do you only go to events?
No, me, I jump weekly minimum.
Yeah, yeah. So always Kenya?
Listen, I have planes. I have a few planes. I have a helicopter. And also, I have we used to train the army for skydiving here.
So
we have the part, we train the special force. No, that means I can use my plane, I can use the army plane.
So you've just basically got an on-demand drop zone whenever you want it.
I can jump wherever I want in Kenya.
That's amazing.
I just need to advise 2 hours before.
That's amazing. I mean, wherever
I jump in Wilson Airport. My office is Wilson Airport. In the middle of Nairobi, I jump in Wilson Airport.
Now, where is that in relation to where we were on the coast for Go Jump?
The relation? Oh, no relation. I see.
No. I mean, how far away is your place from where Go Jump Kenya was operating?
My place depends which one, because I have one house on the beach also, which is not very far. And I used to jump on the beach in front of my house. If you want to come one day, you can come.
Oh, you know I'm going to.
The airstrip is 1 kilometer and a half from my house. And we take off, jump, and we land on my house in the beach when it's low tide.
John, there's no way in hell that I am not eventually coming to Kenya to see these rhinos. There's no fucking way. I have to. Well, because we had so much fun during the boogie and so much fun with a lot of the stories that I got to hear from you there. And you were an absolute character and a joy to have around. So there's no fucking way I'm not coming.
Come and jump.
Hell yes. Come and
jump, but you also can pilot. I can give you a contract to come and teach my pilot.
Let's go. Shit, I'm there, man. I'm bored out of my mind.
Most of the time, I have pilot, I have seen them, I spot them, I say, okay, I go to jump. And I jump. Most of my pilots have absolutely no experience. Huh? The one that they have now, zero experience.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, man, whenever we will plan it out, believe me, I'll make it a twofer trip. I get to come on vacation and see the rhinos, and I'll teach your pilot how to fly jumpers. That sounds amazing to me.
Because I know that is your specialty, huh?
Yeah, that's my thing. That and talking to people like you is pretty much what I do these days.
Okay. But you learn to do that on YouTube, huh?
To fly on YouTube?
Yes, no, I know.
No, it was Microsoft Simulator. That's how I learned.
Oh, okay. No, but that maybe is not bad.
No. Nowadays, it's almost as good as flying the real thing. Back when I started, not so much. No. Well, John, I'll tell you what, man. I could literally get stories out of you for hours and hours and hours, but what I'm going to do is make sure that I get the titles of your books from you so that I can put them out with this so people can try and find out a little bit more about the incredible story and the wild shit that you've been up to and maybe make their way to Kenya to come out and jump with you as well. So honestly, man, I cannot thank you enough for sitting down and talking to me. You are a fucking blast.
The last book, the name was For Amor al Arte, but that is For the Love of Art.
For the Love of Art. All right.
Yes.
But you said it's originally in French or Spanish?
Spanish. This one is Spanish. The one what I write about terrorism was Chimica with 2K. That was in French. What about the situation in 2004 between Secret Service, Afghanistan, Iran, Libya, all those parts.
Aye.
The one was the Manual of the Good Thief.
Okay, the manual of the manual of the good thief for the love of art. No, oh my Lord, I either have to learn how to read Spanish or Google Translate's got to get better because I got to read these fucking books. Again, John, man, I can't thank you enough, man. You have yourself an awesome evening there in Kenya.
Ciao, have a fantastic night.
Ciao,
ciao,
brother. Everybody.
Yalla, Habibi, goodbye.
Well, there you have it. Another episode of the Lunatic Fringe podcast brought to you as always by, well, wait, not as always, actually. Brought to you now by Gyro. Formerly known as Enziero Sports, you'll head to gyro.com for their next level line of canopies. By Pussfoot, the Extreme Sports Collective. Head over to pussfoot.com to check it out. By Summit Parachute Systems, check out summitparachutesystems.com to talk to Jarrett Martin and the gang about kick-ass pilot rigs, rigging courses, and more. By Flyaway Indoor Skydiving, go to flyawaytn.com and check out all the cutting-edge stuff to come. By Pure Spectrum CBD, head to purespectrumcbd.com to check out their wide range of CBD products. And as for us, head to the lunaticfringepodcast.com to listen to any of the hundreds of episodes currently available, hit the link for our YouTube channel, pick up your copy of the Lunatic Fringe book or The Accidental Stripper, and get a sneak peek at upcoming guests. Once again, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.